Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Peter Broderick, who is a film a person from the film business, someone who I thought would be really interesting to talk to in the context of the similarities between film and publishing. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Hi, David. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Often when I talk to people in the publishing industry, I give their kind of background as a way of, just introducing them to the people that are listening. So maybe you could talk a little bit about your background. I know you've been doing this for a really long time, so you'll have to summarize it, but I think it would be good to hear what your experience is.
Well, it's an unusual journey. I started at Yale Law School, and when I was in law school, I ran a film society there. After I graduated, I didn't go immediately to work in law, but worked in film distribution and journalism for a while, and then decided that I better take the bar exam or they'd be on to me. And then I worked as a public defender in DC, Washington, D.C. for 3.5 years, decided to retire from law, and came to Los Angeles and started working with a filmmaker named Terry Malick, who made a film called, was working on a film at that time with him called Days of Heaven. And then I did a lot of consulting in the 80s for foundations and other nonprofits about uses of new media and how it was going to change independent film and other things. And then in the early 90s, I wrote a series of articles about ultra-low-budget filmmaking, the idea of films being made for budgets of, $50, $25, $8,000, and they included El Mariachi and Clerks. Those articles led to me speaking on a number of panels, and then I had the opportunity to work with a man named Steve Bannon to write a business plan and raise money for a finishing fund for ultra-low-budget films and filmmakers. Most films would run out of money in post-production, and this was a way to give them the resources to finish and help them get into the world. And between 97 and 2002, that was called Next Wave Films. I ran that company. Our poster child was Chris Nolan, whose first film Following was made for a budget of $12,000. And his most recent film, at least that's been released, is The Dark Knight, which was made for a budget slightly larger. And then in 2002, Next Wave Films turned into a pumpkin. The Independent Film Channel had been financing it, and they said they couldn't finance it any longer. And so I started to get asked to consult with people about distribution. And then more people asked me, and eventually I became a distribution strategist, a term I made up, because nobody else was doing it. And since late 2002, now we're in early 2010, I've consulted with about 900 filmmakers who are working on the sort of frontiers of distribution. And I help them design innovative strategies for getting their movies into the world, and help them implement those strategies.
Well, and of course, the reason that I wanted to talk to you in the context of the publishing business is just because of the striking parallels that exist now between what I think I've called, and maybe you've called, the art-related businesses of film and books and possibly music, which often people compare to because the digital revolution has affected them so radically. But, you and I have talked in the past about some of your strategies and how they might apply to book publishing. And there was an article about you and what you're doing in the New York Times, which I think was back in January 14th, 2010, where you talked about, the headline is Declaration of Indies, which refers, I think, back to your Declaration of Independence. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, that was a fortunate article for me that it appeared. There was a conference that I organized in early November, and Manola Dargis, the journalist from the New York Times who wrote the article, attended that. We had 200 filmmakers come together from around the country talking to them, and we talked with them about new strategies, and that that conference was, you know, inspired in part by an article I wrote called Declaration of Independence, the 10 Principles of Hybrid Distribution. And the term hybrid distribution, which I think could apply to publishing and to music as well, is a situation where an artist, a writer, a musician splits the distribution rights to their work. So they retain the right to sell films, books, music directly from their website and at concerts or bookstores or wherever. And they partner with companies to distribute their work in other realms. So in the case of film, they would find the partner that would put their DVDs in stores and on Amazon, but they would retain the right to sell DVDs from their website as well. They would partner with somebody that would put their film on iTunes for download, but they would retain the right to do digital downloads and digital streams from their own website. They would partner with a TV channel that would show the movie. They would partner with somebody that would help put their movie in movie theaters. So it's trying to find partnerships where you are, you know, creating a situation that's a win-win situation. The distributor or the publisher does well, and you as the filmmaker or the author also does well.
Right, so it breaks the old mold. For author to publisher, which used to be essentially, I mean, and is an absolute exclusivity, the right to exploit the work in all forms, known or unknown, which is true, I think, of film as well.
Right.
And the idea here is that, you know, for reasons that I think make a lot of sense instinctively to a lot of people, that because the world is changing and the artists are being asked to do things to support their work that weren't required in the past or even weren't possible in the past, they now have there's a room in the deal. And the other side of it, of course, is that the traditional deal, the traditional distribution deal, does not pay well enough for anybody at this point to make it really functional.
Yes, I think that's right. The old idea of a DVD distributor was that if a filmmaker was to sell DVDs from his or her website, those would be sales that would be lost to the distributor who was selling through retail. And I've argued for years that it isn't a zero-sum game, that in fact, if a filmmaker is active promoting his or her work online, that's going to increase retail sales. So
right.
It's not a pie where if one slice is bigger, the other slice is smaller. It's a situation where we can make the pie bigger, and I believe the same thing could apply to publishing.
Right. Well, and I think there are actually identical discussions that I've been both a part of and read that talk about that very issue. Of course, in some cases, it is about, at least with books, and it may apply to film as well, the idea of giving away an electronic version of a book in order to create awareness for it, the theory being that and this applies, of course, to creations that are not immediately high brands. You know, if you're a well-known writer, you might not have to give away your work in order to get an audience. But if you're an unknown author or a lesser-known author, the theory is you give away the e-version in order to become known. That it's not the money that you might earn from sales is meaningless because no one will buy it because they don't know who you are. And what you're doing is using the digital version to create enough of an awareness that there will be some percentage of those people who got it for free and others who hear about it who will want to buy the product, the physical good. That will then, you know, bring some revenue to the deal.
Well, an interesting example of that is the writer Cory Doctorow, who is a leading science fiction author, won many awards, and has sold a fair number of books. And he always puts his movies on his books online for free, and because he is absolutely convinced that increases his book sales. in terms of, you know, regular analog books, and
Right.
he's had a very consistent experience doing that, so it's definitely worked for him.
Right. Now, of course, there is the corollary, or maybe the negative argument, that it only works for a few people because they are able to gain some notoriety for doing it, and you know it may not work for everyone. But on the other hand, the concept that what you're trying to do is build awareness. If you are not a known commodity, if your product is, and this is something that books and film and all the creative products have, is that each new product is an entirely new thing that has to be sold to an audience or connected to an audience as if it was a whole new product every single time.
Right, and I think that one of the things that's so exciting about the internet for filmmakers and for authors and for musicians is that for the first time, they have the opportunity to reach audiences directly. They're not totally dependent on middlemen to do it. So over time, if they can build a core personal audience that they can stay in touch with, that creates a greater possibility of having a sustainable career. And I think that the idea of knowing the names and email addresses of a certain portion of your audience or your fans is really important. And in the old days, things sold through retail were purchased by anonymous members of a mass media audience, and they weren't ever reachable by an author directly. Now, an author obviously can do book signings, and that created an opportunity to engage with people directly, but I don't think in the past people normally would get the names and addresses, or these days the names and email addresses of those people.
Right, and they didn't know what to do with them either.
Right, but I think that's increasingly important.
Yeah, no, and I think the corollary in the music business, and I just witnessed this recently, there's many artists, whether they're individual singers or small, you know, bands, that will do parties, house parties, and raise money, but mainly what they want is to be able to sell their CD and get your name on the mailing list.
Right.
And it's worth it to them to invest their time and energy to give the music to people for free almost in order to win in return your name. Because once if I like your music, I'm willing to give you my name so that the next time you have something to sell, I'll buy the T-shirt or the CD or the mug or whatever it is because I'm a fan. And that relationship between the artist and the consumer kind of brings us back to an earlier time prior to the 20th century when musicians might stroll or, you know, into a town and play almost, you know, like the buskers did because people wanted to have music and entertainment and were willing to pay for it when they heard it in front of them.
Right.
And I think that actually is a very human response, so that, you know, maybe the new technology that enables essentially an ancient human pattern to occur or to reoccur, which is the direct connection between the art and the recipient.
Absolutely, and I think it's interesting in the music business. I'm not quite sure what the analogies here are to publishing or to film, but it used to be that artists and musicians, you know, toured to support the album, but these days they're putting out albums to support the tour, because the tour is where they're making money, you know, selling things on site and selling tickets to the concerts.
Right. Now, it is, of course, as you say, that corollary may not exist perfectly for writers because,
right,
and for film as well. There's the issue for both film and writing is that you have to give it full attention in order to consume it, whereas with music, you can consume desultorily while you do other things.
I do think, David, the analogy is a little closer in film, because one of the areas that's growing for independent film distribution is what I call semi-theatrical and non-theatrical distribution. That's where a filmmaker will go around the country on a kind of screening tour and have the movie shown on a campus or at a museum one night only, one afternoon only, and be there for a Q&A,
right,
and have the opportunity to sell DVDs at the event and get as many email addresses as possible.
Well, I think there are some authors who have done that. I know, you know, people have gotten in the car, driven all over the place, and done exactly that. But maybe the corollary for writers is the blog tour, where you know, a series of blogs will host an interaction between their readers and the author, who obviously is not live in that case, but is communicating directly to the blogger's readers. Or college radio, where, you know, very often you can put, you know, there's really almost no impediment to an author going on to college radio and talking to an audience. You know, they do a giveaway of the books, and really what you're really trying to gain attention and connect with an audience.
Well, I'll give you an example of an author who seems to be pretty good at this. I'm not sure how his name is pronounced, but Patrick Rothfuss, Rothfuss. He's a science fiction author who's written a book that's become a bestseller called The Name of the Wind. It's the first volume in what's going to be a trilogy. And recently, he was going to be in, I don't know, some part of the country. So he let people know where he was going to be, people on his mailing list, and said, if any of you, you know, want to host a book signing. And then within a pretty short time, you can go to his website, which is patrickrothfuss.com, and you can see the list of bookstores that, you know, came out of nowhere, just off his, you know, sparked by this mailing that he sent out. And they're all lined up to, you know, to participate in this sort of mini book tour, even though the book's been out for, I don't know, quite a while now. So I think having the names of those bookstores and the, you know, readers along the way made that possible.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that, and I think there are variations on that theme that are possible for writers to do. I think it's actually really interesting for writers potentially to read about what you've done with filmmakers, because film has been such a difficult thing for independent film to be distributed. There are so many new possibilities, you know, just that both the technology and the web have enabled. I think there are corollaries that work for writing as well. It may not be the same, you know, the same exact thing of going to do screenings with a film, because I think you can get audiences to come out to watch a film more readily than you can get audiences to come out and listen to a writer reading her or his work.
Well, that may be true, but I do think that whether it's, you know, going to the occasional book club along the way, or bookstores, or some, you know, kind of book events, can, you know, give a sense, create an opportunity where a writer can nurture his or her own core audience and have direct access to them, not just, you know, going through a publisher.
Right. No, I think the direct access is the point. I think that's where the corollary, the analogy, is really important. The exact form that will take may vary by the writer.
Right.
You know, some writers are just not able to stand up in front of an audience and do a good job. They're not performers. But on the other hand, they can do really wonderful things with a podcast, or they can do really wonderful things by sending pieces of their work out to a mailing list of people that they gather through a variety of different ways. Or they could use a tool. There's a site called Daily Lit that is really not that old, created by Susan Danziger, who I interviewed not that long ago. And what she's done is created a relationship between writers and readers by sending out really short pieces of work. So you can read in your email, you know, like a serial, a novel or a bunch of short stories at your leisure and when you have the time to read. And she's really creating a different form of relationship between the writer and the reader.
That's great. Well, let me give you some examples, just totally related to publishing. So it's just some ideas that may be heretical, but that some of your listeners might find interesting. At one point, I had a conversation with a very famous literary agent in Los Angeles, and I asked him if any of his writers actually sold books directly from their websites. And he looked at me. He's like, "Well, why would they want to do that?" And I said, "Well, actually, if they buy the book at wholesale, or maybe they even get a better break from their publisher, and they sell it at, say, discounted retail from their website, you know, they're going to make certainly more money, you know, on that than they'd ever make from a regular royalty on a sale through retail." And I'm not suggesting linking to Amazon and selling that way. I'm suggesting actually, you know, having a way to fulfill the books directly from your own website, and you don't have to do it from your kitchen table. You can have a, you know, a company do that, you know, covered by the shipping and handling fee. And I said, so, you know, so that's a, that can be a significant source of revenue for a writer. But also, if the writer does that, then he's going to get the names and emails of his readers, some of his readers. And I think that that's, you know, that's very empowering. And he just kind of scratched his head and said, "Oh, well, maybe, you know, some, you know, kind of starting out implying desperate, you know, writers might want to do that, but established writers would never think of such a thing." But I think we're going to see over time that, you know, more and more people, you know, understand the value of doing things directly supplementing or complementing what their publishers do.
I think that's actually quite valid, and I think there are some writers who are doing that. And of course, the other thing that you can do if you're selling your own work directly to a consumer is you can personalize it. You can offer to sign the book or
right.
give them a product, something that can go with the book that you cannot get any other way.
Right.
And I hope people will look at that as not being competitive to the normal channels, but supplementary, as you said earlier on. You know, it's not a zero-sum game. You're not stealing sales from a bookstore. But increasing awareness of the book and the author overall.
Right.
But I agree with that. I think the value of the direct relationship between the reader and the writer is immense. And I think that's a lesson taken from some of your work.
Well, an example, William Gibson, who is an author that I think is really, really talented, he has a fairly active web presence at different points, sometimes less, sometimes more. But occasionally, he'll recommend a book that he's read and that he thinks is terrific. I heard him once speak at the book fair at UCLA, the Los Angeles Book Festival, and he recommended a book. And then I went and tracked down the book, and wasn't easy to find, and read it and thought it was excellent. So not that he would do this, but, you know, if every now and then, you know, three or four times a year he came across a book that he was passionate about, he could make that a book available directly from his website. And I think it would be a service to readers. It would be a service to the author. It would be helpful to the publisher because it would create more awareness for the book. And it would be, you know, profitable for him.
I agree. Well, I think it would be... Really, I think we should talk another time and continue this discussion because I really think there's a tremendous amount of similarity and value in sharing information across different disciplines. Can you give your website address for the people who might be listening here?
My website is www.peterbroderick.com, and that's P-E-T-E-R, B as in boy, R-O-D, as in dog, E-R-I-C-K, peterbroderick.com. And there's a couple articles there that people might find interesting. One is called Welcome to the New World of Distribution, and another one is called Declaration of Independence, which is the one we mentioned before.
Well, thanks, Peter. It's been a pleasure talking to you. This is David Wilk. I've been talking to Peter Broderick for Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, David. Bye-bye.